No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we're going to start a discussion that we hope to continue for many weeks in the hopes of getting our listeners fired up and ready to take action. Today, we're going to start a discussion about the latest victim to find itself on the endangered species list, the American middle class, the backbone of our great nation, the engine of our great economy, builders of the American dream, the great middle class. Where is it going? Before we go any further, however, let me introduce my co-host, who herself is having a hard time finding the middle class that she's always been a part of, Kathleen Gomez, joining us. I can't even pronounce her name, joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Oh, good afternoon, Senator Brown. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm getting ready for Cinco de Mayo. I got my margarita mix, you know. You walk through the grocery store and they sell these gallon buckets of, you know, all you do is add tequila. I'm ready to rock.
Hey, listen, all that stuff is full of salt and preservatives. Just drink it straight with the lime after it. That's the way you're supposed to do it.
That's the way you're supposed to do it?
Yeah, just, you know, shot with lime.
Now you
put all this. Now, the salt and it's got, is that lime green stuff that you're supposed to mix in with it?
Yeah, I'm sure. It looks like fertilizer.
Exactly. It's probably what it is. But no, I'm doing good. That's right. I mean, it's a busy month. There's Mother's Day coming up and Cinco de Mayo and, you know, and Memorial Weekend. So the summer is getting close. And here we are. What's happening in D.C.? They got back in session, but what did they do?
Nothing. You know, which is good. I mean, that's week in D.C. when they haven't screwed anything up. You know, we had the correspondents' dinner, which is an opportunity for the press to and the president to go at it with each other in a kind of a lighthearted thing. And other than that, we've been talking about this week pretty much what America's talking about. Banning of the Clippers coach and things like that. But there is one thing that Congress did, and that is they planned a hearing for Thursday to discuss in the Government Operations Committee. They're going to hold a hearing to discuss a law that was just passed in the District of Columbia decriminalizing marijuana and making the maximum fine for having less than an ounce of marijuana $25. Now, this is something, if you know, they passed similar laws, of course, in Washington and Colorado and many other states, actually. Washington and Colorado have actually legalized it. But in any other state, Congress would not be able to do this. But since we are the District of Columbia and they control everything that goes on in the city, they get to review our law and see if it's constitutional. I mean, see if they like it. It is constitutional because they're written in the Constitution to have the ability to do that. But so that's where we stand. Once again, they're kind of picking on us. We also
have autonomy. Let me ask you what I think is a really for me and somebody who does not in D.C., who are the people on the Government Operation Committee? I mean, what states do they come from?
They come from all over. And of course, the chairman of the committee is Daryl Issa, Republican from California. But Eleanor Holmes Norton's on the committee, and she's going to testify before it.
Just wondering, do you have mostly conservatives that are on that committee, or is it a mix of both? And if you had somebody from California, although I don't know if the Republican would have, been for what they did in California, but do you have somebody from the state of Washington or anybody who could, be a proponent of, I think what you guys did is right, decriminalizing it? Because, I'm sure that they'll talk about the statistics and how many people. I think you will spend more time if you're a grower. You get a lot of time if you have possession of it, more so than a rapist or more so than somebody who robbed a bank. So, and one last question I want you to ask.
Or you're lumped into the same category that they're lumped in.
Right. Didn't Holder come out and say that the federal government was in favor of decriminalizing or the marijuana, fines?
I don't remember if he did that, but he certainly implied that they're not going to prosecute, they're not going after people for simple possession. But I don't know what his particular statement on the issue was. And as far as the committee goes, we've got really conservative people on it from Texas and Utah. There's the dumbest man in Congress, a guy named Louie Gohmert who's a Republican from Texas. There's a guy named Chafee from Utah, who's a very conservative Republican. But we also have people like Maxine Waters from California, who's pretty liberal. There's a good mix of people on the committee. A guy named Nadler, who's a big proponent of the District of Columbia and is a liberal Democrat from New York.
New York, right?
Yeah. So, we've got some. It's a good mix of people, but as most committees, as all committees of the House are, because it's controlled by the Republicans control the committee. In fact, Eleanor Holmes Norton serves on the committee, but last year she was not allowed to testify.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Are they allowing her to testify this time?
They are. And sometimes they don't. Which is amazing. Amazing.
So, in other words, let's break this down for people so they really understand that when, for instance, Arizona passed a law that allowed for the usage of marijuana for medicinal purposes. Right. So in theory, if we were like D.C., that committee could come in and decide whether or not we would be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So they're going to decide whether or not what you did was correct, and they could reverse what you did?
Yes, but mostly what they've done in history, they've only done that twice where they've overturned the law. Mostly what they do is they defund things. So, for example, we passed a law that we're going to have a needle exchange program, and we're going to pay for it with our own money. And I forget what it costs, but let's say it costs $500,000 a year to do it. We would put it in the budget, and then they would take the money out of the budget so that we couldn't do it. So for 10 years, we couldn't have a needle exchange program until the District of Columbia was the number one city in the world with new AIDS cases. Then they let us use our own.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's incredible. So I think people have to understand that, and I think the Republicans, this is where I have a hard time because I find they're hypocritical when they talk about having more of state rights versus the federal government being involved. And so therefore you would think that they would be for D.C. becoming a state so it could have its own rulings amongst the people that are making them. I mean, it's just so hypocritical. I don't mind if you believe that, then do the right thing, even if you think it may mean that District of Columbia will have a Democratic congressional, what would you call them, senator
delegation,
and stuff like that,
yeah.
Delegation. That should not be the reason why you don't follow your main policies in your Republican platform. And I'm not saying that Democrats aren't hypocritical either. This is one thing that I don't understand. I don't understand how you can say less government, only on issues that you feel it should be, I guess, is what it's about.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because less, you know, the government, they're trying to get the government out of your lives, but the federal government is all in our lives and they're all up in our business. And, you know, it's funny that you say that because we try to play on that. Eleanor Holmes Norton actually passed a budget autonomy bill has a budget autonomy bill in Congress, which basically says, because, you know, D.C. doesn't get to control its own finances. But what happens is we pass a bill, then we submit it to Congress, then it sits there, then it comes back to the city council. It has to be voted on again. There's all this back and forth between us and Congress, which just generates a ton of additional paperwork and expense for the district. So when she put in her budget autonomy bill, she entitled it the Paper Reduction Act of 2013, because, you know, she's saying, you guys are always talking about, let's make government more efficient. Okay, let's make government more efficient. Let DC spend its own money. So, so we're sensitive to exactly what you've pointed out, and we try to play that to show the hypocrisy of these guys. But that being said, and that being our continuing conversation, we'll update you as things go along. Next week, I'm going to attend the hearings on Thursday, so next week I'll be able to report back and let you know what's going on.
And maybe what we'd like, you know, the one thing we haven't really addressed, and as we were talking, I forgot about this, is the whole issue of the marijuana law, because I was wondering what it was like for people who, like, say, in Kansas, live close to the Colorado border. And are the cops, like, waiting for you on the other side, you know, as you cross over? Because can you imagine you go to Colorado and you buy some, you come back to Kansas, and what happens? I mean, you know, this is going to be until everyone – I mean, this is a case where when you have something like this, it's going to have to be across the board, because – and I don't know. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? And it's fair.
Well, you know, we've already had an incident like that where there were – bunch of kids they were college students, I think, in Washington State, and they were busted at Mount Rainier Park for possession of marijuana. And they said, wait a second, we're in Washington State where it's legal. And the police said, no, you're in a national park, and there's a national law against, there's a federal law against the possession of marijuana. So you're being busted because you're in a federal park in Washington State. So technically you're on federal land. You're not
I just said, like, Holder was saying that they would not, like, go after people. So wasn't that a sense going out? I mean, you're in a federal park. I mean, come
on. I don't know that these kids, that these people are actually going to be prosecuted, but they were arrested by park rangers. So and they do that in Washington all the time. We have things, different rules, like, you know, you can carry a container into a park when you play softball. You can carry certain types of containers, but then when you're down on the mall, you can't. Because that's federal land, and they have their own set of rules. It's a big problem in Washington. We run into it all the time. Got to be careful.
Yeah, let me ask. I kind of like the audience maybe to call in or to think about some of this stuff or things that they know that are happening about marijuana as we continue to go on with some of the subjects we talk about. And we'll try to see if we can't get some people to talk to us about it. I'm sure there's some, because I find it very interesting. Arizona might be, you know, we allow it for the use of, you know, when you're sick for medicinal purposes. Yes. But, you know, that's just the next step is probably legalizing it. And I wonder, you know, what the issues are on how you grow it. And somebody, I was watching something that was talking about the whole issue when corporate America will start getting involved in it too. It's going to be very interesting. And when, at least we forget, really, marijuana wasn't really outlawed until the 50s.
Right. And you know, the thing that I find interesting about it is how quickly things are changing. Yes. How quickly, you know, that when we talk to even young Republicans, for example, this issue and the issue of marriage equality don't seem to be a problem for them. Or you know, these are two issues that you would hardly consider conservative issues, but it seems like young people don't have the same problem with them that old people do. So we're seeing that change really rapidly in America. And another thing we're seeing change in rapidly in America is we're seeing the middle class go away, huh, Kathleen? As a member of the fleeting middle class, I don't, you know, both of us, I think.
And it's interesting because as I tried to look up, and let me just repeat our number. So if somebody wants to call in and tell us what they think is happening to the middle class, and that's 888-627-6008. We'd really like to hear from you. But, you know, I went to look at what the definition of middle class is, and there is no definition. And the defining mark of what is considered financially middle class can be anywhere from $32,000 to $64,000 or $32,000 to about, say, $90,000. People think that make that they're middle class. But it's interesting because when you look at Matt Romney, what was his name? And even the president, they talk about middle classes being $200,000 to $250,000 above. And a lot of things that I was been looking at have been making the statement that that's what they consider middle class. They say anybody, you know, making above $200,000 is the middle class. And I'm thinking, man, you guys are absolutely out of your mind. That is not the middle class. That to me is kind of upper and maybe close to being rich. But, you know, I guess it depends on the level that you're making. But I do feel, and I've talked about this a lot, I feel like I am right in the smack in the middle of a club that is overtaking the middle class, and that's the used to haves. You know, I used to have a job. I used to be able to take vacations. I used to be able to, you know, buy a car, you know, maybe, you know, change it and get a different model every 4 years. I used to be able to afford this. I used to be able to afford that. I used to be able to save. And, you know, I was looking at the statistics, and it's very scary. Most, I think it's like over 70% of the so-called middle class has only saved enough money in their retirement funds for maybe 3 or 4 years. The level, it's more important. You know, when we were growing up, it was very important to own your own home. That was the thing. That was what you really aspired to. And now the most important thing amongst Americans, and that's when I'm also that way, is to get a job. The importance of having a good job and a steady job is more important than anything else. And that's a big change. So, you know, I look around in Tucson. I see more apartment buildings being built because I think there's more, they're anticipating more people won't be able to buy homes. And, you know, that's a whole nother thing. I mean, apartments were what you did when you were young. It wasn't what you did when you were older. And, you know, you could sit there and say, oh, well, I have to maintain the grass and there's a swimming pool. But, you know, you don't have that financial investment or that investment that you did when you own a home.
Well, you know, first of all, I think that you've hit on it. Whether you're middle class or not really depends on where you feel you are. You know, you just said that Mitt Romney and this guy has no sense of this stuff at all. I don't know if you remember when he was running for president, they asked him what a loaf of bread cost, and he had no idea. I think he said like $9 or something. He had no idea what a loaf of bread cost because he never buys anything for himself. And there was another thing where they chastised him for not reporting some income or something. And he said, well, there was really no income there. It was just a few hundred thousand dollars, you know, like, you know, that's like change you found in the seat cushions of the car or something. But so he doesn't have a really good sense of it, but you're talking about 200 or 225,000 in 2012, the median household income, and now this is a household, was $50,000, $50,099. That was the median household income for people in the United States, households in the United States. Now, it's gone up steadily since 1967 until we hit 2007, where it starts to go down. And this is adjusted for inflation. So now adjusted for inflation, it's lower for the first time ever. Well, in the last, let's see, adjusted for inflation, it's only gone up. it's only gone up $800 since last year. So it's not keeping pace with inflation.
Right.
So that's changing dramatically. But I think it's important to point out, as you did, that, you know, if you don't feel middle class, if you're not making the ends meet,
right,
then yeah, you're not. And this is a great, this has been the great engine of our economy, the middle class. It's really the American dream, right? That you can come in, you can work your way up and have the fruits of your labor, a house, a car, a decent job. And I think it was interesting that when you and I decided that we're going to take on this subject and we're going to talk about it, and people should know this is the first week, and we're just kind of outlining things, but in the future, we're going to have guests on the show to talk about specific aspects of why the middle class is in decline. But anyway, when we went online and started to look for organizations that
represent
the middle class, there are very few of them.
There's really nothing. I mean, I found the Center for American Progress, which is basically an educational institute, and it's funded by corporations and individuals, very wealthy individuals. There was the Middle Class Alliance, which is basically more like, I think you submit, they give you a plan on how to like organize your neighborhood on middle class issues. And then there was the National Federation of Independent Businesses, which is basically, you know, owners who gross less than 200,000. And then, of course, unions. A lot of articles talked about unions, being the best for middle class. I don't think that that's true, because the middle class to me is the person like me who has done, you know, public relations and legislative stuff, to maybe a woman who's working at a bank and is a manager. And then you have somebody who's maybe a manager of, a retail store, to, you know, and that's, there's no union. There's really no lobbyist. There's nobody in there saying, fighting for middle class issues. And as we know, the way Washington works, the only people who really truly get represented are the ones who have people there every day in the halls of Congress knocking on the doors and lobbying for their interest. And so I was amazed, I think you were too, that there really isn't, you know, AARP, well, that represents, you know, yes, kind of the senior citizens. And then I was thinking, well, what else? You know, where, and we really didn't find anything, did you?
Well, I didn't find very much, no. And I will say that unions are, unions are under attack right now, but they are a big part of America. And a lot of people think of unions in terms of, guys that are build cars and things like that. But they really, all nurses are unionized, all police officers are unionized, all teachers are unionized. There are a lot of people in our society that are unionized, and they're looked out for by their individual unions. And a lot of those people fall into the middle class. But a lot of those people are under the gun now. There are a lot of teachers that aren't making ends meet, and firemen and policemen and people that have two jobs. You know, they said here in Washington that just to afford housing, just to afford typical housing in the District of Columbia, if you and your spouse have minimum wage jobs, you both have to work 60 hours a week just to pay the rent. That's just crazy. It's crazy. You can't have what are you going to eat? How are you going to get to work? How are you going to pay for health benefits? How are you going to do other stuff? You're not going to raise a family. I mean, I think that things have changed dramatically in the last few years in a way that we haven't seen in our lifetime anyway. And that is that, the middle class is getting smaller for the first time instead of getting larger. And I think we need to do about that, something about that. And now we have Mike and Kathleen, Senator Mike and Kathleen, okay? And we're going to rob from the rich. We're going to rob from the rich and give back to the middle class, who are the people that made the money in the first damn place.
Are you sure you didn't do a shot or a margarita before the show?
I did.
You're ready.
I ate the margarita mix with a spoon, and then I did a shot of tequila, like you said. So now I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. Up.
ready to go. Because, you know, one of the things I want to make clear too, something that I found very interesting, is that when you were born into the middle class, okay, you know, you had you assumed that you would always be part of the middle class. It would only mean that you would just be moving upward, maybe to the upper middle class or whatever. But the thought of that, hey, you may have been brought up in the middle class, but you don't necessarily are always going to be there, is something I don't think I ever thought of. And now what I've read is true, is that even if you grew up in the middle class, it doesn't mean you always be there. And in fact, they found that a third of Americans raised in the middle class fall out as adults. And the report found that marital status, well, yes, I know, I went through a divorce, and that is very, very expensive. And definitely you don't really, well, I, of course, didn't come up out ahead. I came out behind. Your education, your test scores, drug use, medical expenses are one of the strong reasons why a middle class child loses economic ground as an adult. So, you know, I don't know, maybe my kids will suffer from that because, of course, you know, through the divorce and the issues of that. But that to me is really surprising, and it kind of sent another little shockwave of like, oh my gosh, because, you know, it's so true. Middle class, I didn't realize was so, you know, was like you're on just teetering on this fence whether or not you stay there, because you have a bad accident, you don't have car insurance, or you have, you know, get cancer, that's all going to be just, you're going to teeter to the other side, because there's just, you know, there's just, it's so expensive that you can't really come back from something like that.
Well, and that's we've talked about this in the past. This is the number one reason for bankruptcies in the United States today is medical, medical emergencies, paying for medical bills. So that's really where I think we have to start the discussion. And we hope people will call in with their experiences. And over the next several weeks, we're going to try to examine what factors are contributing to the disappearance of the middle class, and certainly wages is part of the equation, but cost is the other side of the equation. Medical costs have just skyrocketed. I know you and I talked earlier. This is a subject that we often discuss, and that's college tuition. I worked my way through college, but it cost me $1,200 a year. $1,200 a year. And there were people that loaned me money. I mean, I had an NDSL, a National Direct Student Loan. I had a little bit of scholarship money. I mean, you know, and that was for $1,200 a year. I don't know what you're going to do to go out there to raise $40,000 a year without a college education put yourself through college. I mean, the things have really dramatically changed, and we need to address these contributing factors, I think, and find out how we can best deal with them, and we need to take action as a country. You know,
yes, and I, you and I discussed this—the fact that there's nobody in D.C. who represents the middle class. We want to start something. We want to. Have you all call us in the next couple of weeks. Think about it. If we can be the voice, we want to just start spreading the word that people need to wake up again. This has always kind of been a basis of the show, and get involved and start talking to your neighbors and, you know, shoot us some ideas of what you think we should do to represent the middle class. And I think maybe that's forming an organization to having more shows talk about it and trying to get out there that, you know, middle-class Americans, most Americans are consider themselves middle-class, but they're feeling that they're losing that. And it's something everyone's talking. We just need to get it to that point where it actually, we all start acting upon our concerns. So well, we want to know what issues you want to talk about. So call us, right?
Right. Well, and let me explain to you too, when Kathleen says shoot, because she's from Arizona, you know, you always have to be careful using that word with Kathleen.
That's
don't
right.
Actually, just shoot. Send us an email. No, but you know, it's funny that you should say that nobody represents the middle class, because that's all the people in Washington ever talk about, and the politicians, right? They're right. All talking about how it's all about the middle class, and they are representing your interests in everything they do. But in the end, you know, what do? They bail out these Wall Street bankers who have become fat on squandering your money and cheating you. And then they charge students more money to get a college loan than they charge the bankers who are cheating you. So how is that helping the middle class? I mean,
and why aren't we angry about it? And why aren't we doing something instead of just accepting this? And you know, like the gas prices, you know, we talked about that impacts the middle class pocket. And then I was reading all this stuff, and it seems like the people who decide the prices are these future guys who, you know, go into the future markets and decide what the price of oil will be in the summer. And it's that commodities thing where it's a guess. So they're guessing that gas is going to be $4.50, and then that's what it becomes. It's amazing. It's a self-prophesizing kind of way in which we pay gas. And, you know, why are we accepting this? I mean, I never thought of us as being just like sheep or, you know, or just like, you know, muddling through the mud and being told how we to do it. And we do it. I mean, America is known for standing up. We better start standing up for something for us, for the middle class.
Well, and this is a very old business model, right? This is how heroin dealers work, from what I understand. They sell you the drug at very cheap prices, and then once you're hooked, the price goes way up. Well, that's right. What's happened with gasoline in America. For years, look, I used to pump gas when I was a kid, and it was 28 cents a gallon. And even in the days when I was in college and it was going above a dollar a gallon, it was $2 or $3 or $4 in Europe. We all were gluttons on cheap fuel, cheap energy. And now we all own cars. We're all, you know, we no longer have a family car. Everybody in the family has a car. We're all hooked on the stuff. And now we're willing to pay $4 a gallon for it. I think that one of the things we have to do is get tough. And I think you're right. We have to get angry. And we're going to take a little break right now. And just so you know, one of us is angry. And that person is Kathleen. And she's picked today's song, which expresses her anger. And at first I thought this song was inappropriately angry, and I didn't like it. But then I decided better to let Kathleen vent her anger musically rather than letting her take it out on me, which, you know, she does a lot. So here we go. Here are the Congos with Come With Me Now.
Yes.
Kathleen's angry. We'll be back in a minute. All right.
Ready to go.
And we're ready to go. Where are all the angry people out there? Call in and let us know how you feel, because we're not going gently into that good night. We're going to rage against the dying of the light, especially being kicked out of the middle class, where Kathleen and I have been card-holding members for a very, very long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I did want you to know that I did have a camel hair coat. I had got pictures from a friend of mine who sent me pictures, and I didn't realize I once had a camel hair coat too. But I had a little fur on it, so it was a little bit.
Well, that's because camel hair was in. You just didn't. I was ahead of my time.
I guess you were behind your time, because that was 77, and when you came and saw me, it was like 92. So, whatever.
Well, I still have that camel hair coat, and it's going to come back in style, and then you'll be sorry. Of course, it won't fit me anymore, so when it comes back in style, it won't matter.
That's right.
But that's the whole thing. I can't afford a camel hair coat anymore.
Not anymore.
Middle class. Right. I have to get imitation camel hair. So let's get back to talking about the middle class. I mean, what are we going to do if the middle class falls apart? I just don't understand it. And I know that it's the big political issue out there, that everybody's talking about it. You know, and one thing that I'd like to talk about is I'd like to get feedback from people on this. You know, it's funny, during the break, we were talking about the Washington Correspondents' Dinner a little bit. And the big joke that one of the big jokes that went over at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner is that the host said if Hillary Clinton got elected, that would be a good thing because we could pay her 30% less. You know, and everybody laughed at that. But the truth of the matter is, how much does that hurt the middle class that women make 70 cents on the dollar and they're such an important part of the economic engine in America, you know? And look at people like you. I mean,
but look at this. When I started working, I started working at the Democratic National Committee, and this would have been what, like 1980 or 1979, right? The whole big thing was that women were making 15 cents to the dollar. Now that's, let's say, 1980. I'm amazed that we have increased now that we make 70 cents to the dollar, which is a huge improvement, but we still see women, especially women who are single mothers, not being able to make ends meet. So that actually, when you think of it, from when I started working, making 15 cents to the dollar, now it's 70 cents, there should have been some improvement. So what is that saying? Over, you know, instead of getting better and the middle class getting a stronger foundation, we've lost so much ground that 70 cents, you know, that improvement doesn't even weigh in.
Well, because other changes have taken place in that same time. In that same amount of time, you have more female-headed households
than
you had. You know, I mean, how many of your parents' friends did you know that got divorced? I mean, very, very seldom in among my parents' friends. But I know, you know, I would say I know more divorced people than I know people that have never been divorced.
Well, you know, but that was, when I think of it too, I know a lot of my parents' friends, you know, who didn't get divorced, were married, but they were like alcoholics, you know, because they weren't happy or they were, I mean, I don't know if they were in Valium, but a lot of the women were questionable, you know what I mean? So I don't know, did they know something we didn't, that you're better off to stay married than to get divorced? I don't know.
Well, I don't know that.
It's a very
well,
big
I don't issue. I don't think you I you know, I think if you ask most people that have gotten divorced, they would tell you they're glad they got divorced. But but yeah, that is certainly one side of it, I think, economically, that you know, that now we have more female-headed households, and there's less money in them, and there's that's added to the amount of poverty, and it's certainly added to the people that have fallen out of the middle class.
Right.
You know, when I was in graduate school, now that was 1979, 70% of women. 70% of all women were found in six jobs. There are 158 jobs in that day, in that time. There were 158 legitimate job categories listed by the Department Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics. So, but women, 70% of them were found in just six occupations: nursing, teaching, secretarial, domestic,
restaurant, retail, or something like
right,
that.
Restaurant, right, restaurant, retail. So, and they were all low-paid professions. You know, that's changed dramatically. But what hasn't changed is that women are still in the lower rankings in almost every profession, even though they've moved up to the professions. So, for example, in medicine, they're more likely to be pediatricians or dermatologists who make, rather than surgeons or, you know, the people, cardiac people, or the people that make the most money. So women are still found, even though they've moved up into all these categories. I bet they're found in most categories now. I bet, you know, it's closer to one, maybe all 158. I don't know. But they make they still find themselves at the lower end of the income scale and even the profession. So, you know, that's one thing I think that has really had a dramatic impact on the middle class, is that even though we've made great progress in certain areas, we haven't our society hasn't adjusted and our economy hasn't adjusted to make the most of those changes. And I think, you know, I think that's gonna improve over time. But while that's improving, Walmart's getting richer and fatter, and they're driving little people out of business.
Well, they've already done that. I mean,
yeah.
Let me just say this, that when Walmart came to Douglas, we had a downtown, and a downtown was really unique and great, and we had little mom and pop shops, and Walmart, you know, it had every department that used to be down that main street, and they closed down, and basically downtown is pretty much non-existent now. That I must say we have to blame, because we want it cheaper, we want a different variety, or maybe, you know, things from different places, but we want it cheap. And when you know to get that means that they buy in mass bulk. And I was always amazed, because, you know, we used to have a lot of dress stores and stuff like that. And it was just, I could buy something in Arizona, and when I went to school, I went back east. No, I would never see it. Now we're buying from the same companies, whether you're in the East Coast, West Coast, South, or North, it's going to be the same clothes. You know, so we've given up a lot of individuality by wanting things so cheap. And you know, I mean, we do. I mean, look at Walmart. I mean, most of those people are not full-time. They're part-time, so they don't have to pay the benefits. And that, to me, is really, how much money do you have to have? How big do you have to get so that you don't feel any kind of some obligation to at least give your workers that they be able to make a good living working for you? Because a good living means you can have a happy employee. You know, I mean, well, doesn't it just make sense?
Well, and it's just a detriment to the whole society, because, you know, when the Walmart guys make all that money, they've got a whole battery of tax attorneys showing them how to keep from paying taxes, how to move the money around, how to make sure that they get the most benefit out of it. When you and I make money, we pay our taxes.
Right.
So society benefits because the tax base shrinks. Society loses because the tax, the tax base shrinks. And, we lose, you know, as you already said, we lose as a society. I mean, hell, I used to go into the hardware store and ask the guys how to do stuff. Now you go into Home Depot, they don't know how to do anything.
No, they don't. Although, you know, a lot of people in Tucson work two jobs. They work in a bank and then they go work at Home Depot or one of these places. And it's it's frightening to think how much we have to work, you know, just to not even be sure that we'll be able to meet our bills. I want to just say again, our number is 888-627-6008. So you can call us or Skype us at BBS Radio 1, because we'd really like to hear from you guys out there. I mean, I feel this, and I know Michael feels it, but, you know, I know there's a whole lot out there that have a lot to say, and we'd love to give you a platform in which to say it. So, you know, we talked about that. We talked about, right, the issue of minimum wage and you know, the fight that's had. Didn't the Senate just knock it down? I mean,
they're continuing to fight over it. A national minimum wage, which is just a joke here in the District of Columbia. I mean, when we're talking about a $10 national minimum wage, that's really not going to work in the district. But we know it's going to cut down on the number of jobs. But in the end, we've got to reach a good balance. As you pointed out when we had an earlier discussion, only 3% of the economy gets a minimum wage. So how drastically it's going to affect the economy, I don't know. But it's certainly going to pull some people up, because making $7.80, which I think it is in some places, is just not going to make it. Well, I see we have Bonnie on line one. So let's go to her and see if she has a question. Okay. Hey, Bonnie,
hello,
are you there?
Hello, Michael, Kathleen.
Okay, sounds good.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, I'm here.
So what's your question or your comment?
Well, my comment is that middle class, I think, is subjective in a way, in that I think that if you grew up middle class, that you continue to believe that you are middle class.
Yeah.
Even when you're not, even when it's obvious you can't.
Well, because it's funny, because my brother asked me a question a year or so ago, and he said, well, so what are you? And I said, well, I'm middle class. And then I started looking up statistics. And I'm not middle class. I'm a bit above that. But it never occurred to me that I was.
Yeah, well that's a good point. And I think also in America, we're all self-made people. You know, that's part of our psyche. So so if you were born and your parents left you $10 million and you turned it into $20 million, you think of yourself as a self-made person, you know, which is just crazy. Certain people have advantages, but we all like to, I think, so I guess what I'm trying to say is what you're saying, I believe, is something that we all like to say, that we're middle class. Even the upper class people say we're middle class, because, you know, it's an American thing to be middle class.
Well, I think it's subjective in a sense too, but I think that there are things that they're saying that you have to ask yourself. And one of them was that it was a poll done, and they said, you know, these are the six things that you have to have to be middle class, and that was making between 32 and 64,000, and even if you make more than that, you still, like you said, you think you're middle class. But the thing that happens now is people feel that they are. That they're probably, you probably have to feel that it's hard to make ends meet, because that's what the middle class is feeling, maybe for the first time. I think there wasn't that fear. They always had enough to put a little away, to take a vacation, to buy something special for a special occasion, and that now is not there.
Well, you know, let me ask Bonnie this question, which one of my favorite Republicans, one of the only three Republicans in the history of the world that I liked, Ronald Reagan, said, are you better off than you were 4 years ago or 6 years ago or 10 years ago? Do you feel that way, Bonnie, that you're better off financially than you were?
I am better off financially because I saved wisely.
Yeah.
And I got a buyout from my company.
Yeah.
Are you married and do you have children?
I have cats.
All right. See, to me, I was talking with some friends. Having kids is one of the most if I hadn't had kids, I wouldn't have a problem. And I'm not sitting trying to minimize
really
you.
I mean, but a single
children are very expensive.
They are very expensive. And to say that the median household income in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C., we are all in the top area of median household incomes. I think Maryland is number one, and then Virginia and D.C. are tied at number eight. But how do you send children to college when the median household income in the District of Columbia is $59,000
a
year? Right. Right. You don't. You put them into debt for the rest of their life, and they'll never get out of it. Because you know how those interests
are. And how do the kids end up paying for it? They don't, because they're not going to get a job that pays them, $100,000 a year to be able to pay off 1 year's debt.
Well, you know, and I think you said it too, you're an unusual case in America these days. This has changed so much. But hell, to get your company to give you a buyout or a severance or a going away package or whatever you want to call it. I mean, hell, they don't even give you a party anymore in most companies, or they give you a watch, right? That you used to get a gold watch. You don't even get that anymore. I mean, the first three jobs that I ever had coming out of college were all crappy jobs that didn't pay very much, but they all provided me with health benefits. I got health insurance with every job I had. Now, I think that's very unusual. And you see people that are trying to escape, especially under the new Obamacare law, which Kathleen points out this week, the Republicans have renamed because it looks like it might actually work. But, you know, they're cutting people back. They're making them part-time so they don't have to provide them with benefits.
But, you know, because they have to pay so much, and I had no clue when I left my company how much they were paying per month for me.
How much was that?
Care.
And that's just
me,
you. That's
lowest,
not a family,
it's a
right?
But well, yeah, I worked for the company for 26 years, and they were paying something like $600 or $700 a month for medical care.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, in the Obamacare, which is not bad, I mean, in fact, I believe in socialized medicine, so I don't think it went far enough, but because I'm on COBRA now, I'm paying $655 a month.
Right. Well, you know what?
And how much of that am I going to use?
Well, you know what? The average cost, I think, when I was in business, now it may have changed, but it was 15% to 17%. Of typical, you know, was the cost of your salary in addition to your salary. So if I paid you $100,000 a year, it was really costing me $115,000 to $117,000 a year to do that with paying your Social Security.
I've always been surprised when I get my W-2 form how much money I make because I didn't know I made that much.
Well, another thing, too. Let me interject something that I know that I hear a lot from people out here and friends that I know about who have their businesses and how much government regulations they have to go by. Like, I have a friend who's a landscaper, and he was telling me, I didn't realize that everything he has, every car that he uses, is under the Department of Transportation's regulations. So, you know, these small businesses have so much that they have to go through, so many hoops and so many rules and stuff that they have to do, that their profit gets less and less. So if he has, say, someone like, you know, 15 employees, he's looking at a margin that's much, much less now, and yet he has this high cost of his employees. So, you know, for the individual small business owner who usually also makes up the middle class, they're finding it tougher and tougher while the big corporations just, I mean, you know, it's all kind of worked out behind the door. So do you agree, Bonnie? You think that's true?
I agree 100%. I mean, because if you're a small business owner, and my company employs, or the company I used to work for employs 9,000 people. And so they were paying health benefits in all the different countries that they're in. And let's say it's an average of $655 a month. But if you're a small company, you're not going to get the type of rates that we get, that we got.
That's right.
And so you're going to pay probably twice that.
Oh, at least.
And
you
so
know,
it would limit what you could make.
When I ran my own small company, it was the highest cost I had. It was more than my mortgage. It was more than anything else I paid was health insurance. Well, we only have about a minute left. So first, let me thank you, Bonnie, for calling in and tell everybody that next week we want more people like Bonnie to call because we want to discuss what our responsibility is. Do we have a responsibility as a government to save the middle class?
What I will do, I'm going to be visiting my parents next week.
Uh-huh.
And my stepfather is more Democrat than anybody I've ever met, and I think I'll have him call in and tell you what he thinks about it.
That would be great. Where is that in? What state?
He's in California.
Oh, good.
So,
okay.
Well, that would be great. And thanks again, Bonnie, for calling in. And you know, that's something I wanted to get to today, but we didn't have time, is what is the responsibility for the government? You know, I judged a history day, and a kid did a project on the Homestead Act, you know, where we literally gave away up to 320 acres to anybody that would go live on it so that we could populate America. We had the GI Bill, where we took the people coming back from the Second World War, and we really created, the government really created the middle class. So do they have an obligation to keep it going? That's what I'd like to talk about next week. And I hope you'll be there. I'll give you the last 30 seconds, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh.
Vent your anger.
Well, no, just I just hope that everybody out there listens and gets involved. At least, you know, call us so that we can discuss on, you know, do we need to form an organization? Do we need to just be a voice? I think it'd be great to just start something going, and we got to get motivated and get up off of our seats and do something.
Okay.
So that's it for now. That's next week, we'll continue this conversation. Yes.
Get off your seat, pick up the phone, and call us. Talk to you next week. Thank you, America.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.